Hello, friend. Welcome to today's Catapult Leaders Podcast special edition of the powerful How I Did It series, where successful Black executives share their hard-won learnings and wisdom, obstacles overcome, mountains climbed, revealing the true secrets of their professional success. Why? So that you can see the roadmap to your own super success. I'm Daryl Mobley. Catapult Leaders is America's leading executive search firm that exclusively matches Black mid to senior level managers, junior military officers, early career talent, and college interns for engineering, supply chain, computer and data science, and marketing and advertising roles with top companies. Today's How I Did It guest is Cynthia D. Colbert. Cynthia is the CEO, Chief Spark Plug, of a wonderful change consulting firm. Cynthia is a double jacket graduate of Georgia Tech with a bachelor's degree in industrial and systems engineering and a master's of science in industrial engineering with a supply chain concentration. Cynthia has years of experience in manufacturing, supply chain, and human resources at the Procter & Gamble Company, as well as in nonprofits. She has had end-to-end supply chain roles, including material supply management, distribution and warehouse, supply network design, and transportation. She serves as president-elect of the Georgia Tech Black Alumni Organization and leadership development chair for Phi Pi Omega chapter of Alpha Kappa Alpha sorority. She is the chair of the Business Management Advisory Committee for West Georgia Technical College and a member of the Noonan Youth Advisory Committee. Cynthia's mission is to use speaking, training, and coaching to spark positive transformations that help individuals and organizations deliver sustainable outcomes to reach their definition of success. Lean in. Take notes. Let's go. All right, Cynthia. I am excited. Here we go. What is the most important personality trait someone who is Black would need to be in order to be successful in your industry?
I believe it's confidence backed up with substance. So what I mean by that is you got to give people something to work with. So you can't just be confident for no reason. But we know that we all got here because we're well qualified, we're well prepared. And so you have to go into every situation believing that you are supposed to be there. And that's half the battle.
Wow. Love it. Love it. What's one meaningful mistake you made? You know, we've all, those of us have been around for a little bit. We've stumbled a little bit. But what's one meaningful mistake you made in your professional career that stung you a bit? And what would you change about yourself so that you would not make that mistake again?
Yeah, I think as I think about that mistake, because you're right, over a career, you certainly do make some. You don't make all the right moves. But it was one that I thought I had learned. And then toward the end of my career, I had to relearn it a little bit differently. So when I came in and first started working, we were told just work really hard and the system will take care of you. And I am still waiting to see who the system is, waiting to be introduced to the system. And so what I learned from that situation is you own your career. I'd heard people say that you own your career, but it didn't make sense to me until after I'd worked so hard and I saw other people getting promoted over me, making more money than I was making. And so when I took the driver's seat, if you will, in terms of my career, then I learned that it's not really about trusting the process. It's about trusting yourself and knowing what you want. And so that was early on in my career. And as soon as I did that and I said, hey, this is what I want to be. This is what I want to do. Everything changed in terms of my career, in terms of how quickly I got promoted, my pay raises, all those things. When I got to the end of my career, I thought I had done a really good job of setting myself up for success. So I had sponsors and mentors. I was on all the right lists, you know, for promotion and those things. But what happened was my lead sponsor retired. And so when my sponsor retired, I didn't go back and follow up to make sure that my position was secured with the folks who are left. I made an assumption, trusted the process, that because I was on the right list, that I was going to stay there at my same level. But when my sponsor left, then other people started jockeying for position with their sponsors who were still there. and my career stagnated. And so that was a big lesson for me, is that this owning your career thing never ends. You have to keep owning and managing your career. And even when people leave, when people retire, you can't assume that your position is still solidified. Then you have to go back and do more work. So that was a big aha for me.
That is an amazing, amazing point you've made there. And I'm stunned by it. I want to talk, I could spend this entire talk just talking about that, because that's exciting, but I owe you and I owe our audience. I got to keep going. That is own your career. Fantastic. All right. What's your best advice for those who want to increase their visibility inside your organization?
So, you know, I worked at P&G, so we have all these great leadership training moments. And one of the things that I remember most that I take with me is we talked about PIE, the PIE model. So it's performance, image, and exposure. And the reason that PIE is first is because performance is most important. So if you want to increase your visibility in a positive manner in the company, first you got to perform. So you have to deliver your results, and not just deliver them. But what I tell people is you should pick at least one thing that's on your action plan that you are going to over deliver. So you're expected to deliver the results, but what are you going to exceed expectations on? Because once you start to do that, one, you establish your image of somebody who is going to deliver, but also somebody who is going to deliver over and above. So if you have four things on your action plan, and one of them should be exceeding, and as a matter of fact, you should take on a fifth thing. So that's how you broaden too. So it's one of my managers explained it as you cover your square and then expand your square, right? So your square is just the base, that's average. So everybody's supposed to do that. So you got your square covered, you checked off something I've exceeded expectations on, and now I've made a bigger square. So now that gives you some visibility, that gets your name spoken in places where it wasn't spoken before. It gets people asking questions about you, and that gets folks starting to come to you to ask how can they support you, as opposed to you trying to look for them.
Wow, Cynthia, you're killing it. How important has networking been to your career, and what's your best advice to our audience for how to network effectively in their careers?
Yeah, that is very important. I tell people, because a lot of times, especially for Black folks, we say, oh, I'm not political, I don't do that kind of stuff. But here's the thing, if you're gonna work in corporate America, networking is essential. And so you don't show up to a basketball game in football cleats. So don't show up in corporate America and wanna be successful and not do the things that are gonna get you there. So networking is very important. People wouldn't believe this, but I say that I'm a learned extrovert because I had to do that because I knew it was something that I needed to do. Being the only one, being a woman in engineering, being in corporate America is something that I figured out if I don't do this, I'm going to get left behind. And so what I try to find are natural ways to network. So I'm not going to cold call somebody like, hello, person X, that's the CEO. I just decided I would not gonna happen, but find natural affinity. So join your employee resource groups, your industry groups, go to conferences. And that way you kind of create this spider web where you know somebody who knows somebody. So then when you're asking questions and you wanna meet somebody, you can get an introduction. Or at least you can say, hey, I see we both went to Georgia Tech. I was wanting to know if I could ask you some questions. Or we didn't have LinkedIn when I started my career. Now you have LinkedIn, so it's easy to see people that you share, you know, folks that you know that are shared resources. You see their background. So that's a great way to kind of make that first initial step that won't feel like a cold call. And so then you don't feel like you're being inauthentic. You're just being yourself and you're using those natural affinities that you have.
This has already turned into a master class. I've only asked you four questions. This is amazing. Okay. What's the most important lesson you've learned over your career?
It goes along with the you own your career, but it really is you define success. And then you ask for what you want. So once you get it in your head, this is what I want, this is where I want to go, then you have to say it out loud. So I just thought that that was going to naturally happen. And that was a big learning for me. It's like, of course I want to get promoted. And I had a manager that said, I thought you were satisfied where you were. You know, you're just working hard and keep. I was like, oh my gosh. He was like, well, you didn't say it. I'm like, I'm saying it. I'm saying it now. And so what I learned is you have to say it And so these networks that you build, you keep that message. It's just like, you know, a presidential campaign when you're staying on message. Once you're very clear on what it is that you want, you stay on message. Everybody you talk to, you're like, this is what I want to be, you know, for me. And I'll tell this story. When I started in manufacturing, there was this clear path. Everybody did. You're a process engineer, then you're a maintenance manager, then you're a department manager. Maybe you go do HR and then you can become the plant manager. So for me in my career, all I knew for this large corporation was the plant. So someone asked me what I wanted to be, I would say, I want to be plant manager. So I had no idea that the plant manager level was a level I could do in supply chain and not have to be at a plant. I had no idea that there was another path that I could get there, especially if I said, I want to be a supply chain associate director as opposed to I want to be a plant manager. Right. And so I did my process engineer role and it was time to start thinking about my next role. And everybody in the plant, because that was their perspective, said, next, you got to be a maintenance manager. So I just started repeating that. I love engineering. I am a supply chain geek. So I love a warehouse. I love a drop lot. I love fork trucks. I really do. I do not love, I was in a paper plant. I do not love coming home every day with emulsion down my back and paper dust in my hair. Not fun for me. But that's what a maintenance manager would do. And so I just started repeating, I want to be a maintenance manager. And it took a mentor of mine to say, do you want to be a maintenance manager? And I said, this would be a very good role for me. And it's going to help me to get my promotion involved. She said, that's not what I asked you. I asked you, do you want this role? And I was like, no. She said, well, stop telling people that's what you want. I was like, but I have to. She was like, no, you don't. That was the most freeing moment ever when I said, I don't want to be a maintenance manager. I actually want to work in the warehouse. People were saying, nobody wants to do that. You can't work around. I was like, well, actually, I want a career in supply chain. I don't want to be at the plant my whole life. What? There's no, I literally was told there's no such thing as a supply chain career in this company. And I started thinking, maybe I need to go to a different company. But because I started saying that out loud, guess what? The supply chain associate director came to visit the plant. And I was on his agenda. And I said, do you know if there's a such thing as a supply chain career? And he pulled out a 20-page PowerPoint presentation to explain to me the supply chain career. And I was like, I have been waiting on you my whole career. Somebody, they told me this didn't exist. He was like, it absolutely exists. And so from saying I want to be in the warehouse to this meeting with the director, 6 months later, I was transferring to Cincinnati, working for him in a supply chain role. Yeah.
All right. What's been, maybe this was it, but maybe there are others. What's been your favorite job in supply chain?
Favorite. I really, like I said, I'm a supply chain geek, but what I really found that I liked the most was when I was in a supply network design role. Because I got an opportunity to take everything that I had learned from material supply and warehouse and distribution and kind of reimagine what the supply chain should look like. I always tell people I have a healthy dissatisfaction with the status quo. So it's like, okay, yeah, this is the way we do it now, but what's the vision of where we want to go? And if we want to get here, what do we need to do to prepare ourselves now to get where we want to go? And that may mean blowing up your concept of what the supply chain is supposed to look like. And so that was really fun for me to come in and for people to tell me, you can't do that. Really? Thank you. Thank you for that challenge, because now I'm going to have to do it to show you. So, you know, from the manufacturing turnaround that we did with changeover improvements that helped facilitate us getting a faster flow in and out of the plant more consistently, to figuring out what's the right distribution network for our raw materials. So those roles are really cool because we got to reimagine what we could do differently in order to have some future success.
Reimagine. Love it.
You are listening to the Catapult Leaders Podcast special edition of How I Did It.
All right. Now let me cut to the point here on this issue. What are your five keys for Black women to achieve professional success in a supply chain field.
Mm-hmm. And these are, I don't think these are necessarily supply chain related, but these are my five.
Okay.
First thing is get results and share them. So that's the piece. So if nobody knows that you're out there getting these results, it doesn't mean much, right? You're just working really hard. So mm-hmm. you got to deliver, but then you got to tell people what you're doing. The second one is the networking. And not just networking to say, hey, I met you, but then use your resources. So it should be a two-way kind of thing. Sometimes for the people in your network, you should be helping them with information and not just always calling them, asking them for something. Mentors and sponsors, critically important. Mentors are going to come. They're going to be easier to achieve. And I think people really need to understand the difference between a mentor and a sponsor. So these mentors are your trusted advisors. These are the folks that you can call. And I still have great relationships with my mentors now. And I still call them just randomly sometimes, like, I need to rant about this. Okay, thank you so much. Now let's talk about something else. So having those people and those people, companies have mentorship programs because a lot of leaders need to show that they're mentoring others to help them with their career. So this is a mutually beneficial situation, it could be. Now, sponsorship is a little bit more difficult because a sponsor is someone who actually has a seat at the table that can make a decision on your promotion, increasing your pay, and giving you your assignment. And so they may not be a trusted advisor necessarily. They may not be your best friend that you can call up on the weekend, but this person is putting their credibility on the line to say that you are the right person for this role, this promotion, this whatever. And so that sponsorship, if you do those other things we talked about, delivering, exceeding expectations, going outside of the average box, getting this exposure, people get to see you. Most of the sponsors that I've had, my mentors have connected me with my sponsors. No. And so that is critical. If you don't have a sponsor, somebody who is in the decision-making seat, then all of you getting is advice, but you might not be making career progress.
Okay. Great. Wow. So obviously having a mentor is important to you, but any particular advice on getting one? Getting the one, you say they come along and they come and go, but any advice you want to give on how to get one? Right now. If somebody needs one right now.
I think you should raise your hand and say that you want one. I think you should find somebody who is doing something similar to what you're doing or something that you would like to do in the future. Again, using your affinity networks or some other connections will help you to identify that person. And I would suggest that you don't start off like, hey, I want you to be my mentor. It might be, I'd like to sit down. Do you have 15 or 30 minutes where we could sit down and meet? I'd like to get some career advice from you. And then you can kind of see what kind of relationship you have. One of my mentors who is near and dear to my heart, my manager, the one that hired me out of the plant, said, I want you to meet this person. So we had a 30-minute meeting that turned into a 3-hour meeting. I was like, I really like this lady. Like, we connected on so many levels and we didn't even realize how much time had passed. And so, yeah, she's one of those people that I still call. Other people, I've met with them and I'm like, oh, that's nice. You know, and you don't have to just have one mentor. It's not like dating. You can have more than one. you can have one that you know you talk about strictly about this person is an expert in this area. And when I want to have questions about material supply management, I go to this person and I know I can get what I need. Some person may be your overall mentor, like one of my mentors, she's my mentor / life coach. I call her about everything, like every single thing. And then other people are really about navigating your career. Like, these are the pointers I need. The key to those relationships is, one, you know, you got to feel a certain level of comfort with them. So just have the initial meeting and then fill it out. And then you can ask the question, you know, hey, you know, would you consider being my mentor? Most people are going to say yes. You know, for me, I had a lot of people that I mentored. So I would ask them, okay, would you be willing to meet in an unconventional time? Because I don't cook a lot, but I like to eat. So would you be willing to do Sunday brunch? Or dinner on Friday after work for our meetings, as opposed to trying to meet during the day, because I just don't have any more time during the day. And if they're good with that, I'm good with that. And, you know, we are able to have a lot more rich discussions. But yeah, don't just call somebody up, cold call, and say, hey, will you be my mentor? It's not going to work. It is about a relationship. And that trusted advisor relationship doesn't happen just from one conversation.
Smoking. You are smoking. I knew you were going to be great on how I did it. I knew it. Next question. What's your best tip for how to manage effectively up and down the chain of command? A lot of people struggle with that. They don't know what to do. You get up, you get down. What's your best tip?
Know your audience. So for managing up, you don't want anybody upward in the chain to get any surprises about anything that you're responsible for. So that could be a quick drive-by, let me tell you something, or anything of that nature. When I have my hierarchy, I come into an organization, I kind of figure out who are the people that sit in the certain seats in certain positions. One of the things that I do is I get to know their admins. The admins know them better than anybody else, right? The admins also, to be honest, if they like you and you're trying to schedule a meeting, they'll work with you to get on a schedule. And if they don't, it's going to take you a long time. So pay to be nice to the admins. Also, talk to people who know them to kind of get a feel. It's kind of like when we were in school, we would ask about certain professors, how do they like to give tests? You need to know the same thing. I had one manager that loved PowerPoint presentations. So it's like, never go talk to this person without a PowerPoint. This is what they like to see. And I had another one who absolutely hated it. You go in there with a PowerPoint and he's just like, oh my gosh, really? PowerPoint? I just need three bullets. And so knowing your audience and figuring out how to communicate so that your message can be received. So it could be the same thing that you're telling all these people, but you just got to give it to them how they want it. You know, I had one of our VPs said that he intentionally schedules meetings with people for 15 minutes so that they can be briefed.
Yeah.
Of course, it's you to figure out what is the message that you're trying to give. How can I pare this down and get it? And then he's like, if I like where it's going, we can meet longer, but you get 15 minutes. That's what you get. And so you have to recognize that. And then for the people, your peers and people that may work for you, people need context. People are adults. They don't want to be talked down to, like, do this because I said so. Why are we doing this? Help me understand why this, how is this helpful? How does what I do relate to what this is going to deliver? Making sure that folks understand that. So the message may be different. It may take you longer to explain it. Don't just say, the big boss said we have to do X, Y, Z. It's like, this is what's going on. This is why we're making this change. And this is how you can impact this change that the company needs. And so really know your audience. Know and understand your audience. Do your research. That's going to help you to communicate.
Wow. Leadership up and down. What's your best advice for those who want to move from an individual contributor role into a leadership role? This is another question that we get.
So I think that whole pie model piece about achieving those results helps. Also, what else can you do? So it's the so what? So it's like, okay, everybody does this. So someone told me once to behave like the role that you want to be. So if people see you acting, they see you conversing with your peers, coaching, you know, your folks, even though they don't necessarily work for you, but you're providing assistance, you're giving updates, you're in there, you're very knowledgeable about the overall business, not just this is my job, this is the only thing I do, but you understand the big picture. How does what I do impact the bottom line of the organization? How do these things directly relate? That's going to give you an opportunity to start looking like the next level leader, behaving, acting like them, so that people will be surprised when you get promoted and say, oh, I thought you were already doing that. Exactly. That's what you want.
That's what you want. If you could grab a bite to eat, I think about this all the time. If you could grab a bite to eat with any historical figure and ask that person any question and they would answer, who would you choose and what question would you ask?
You know, I recently had a chance to speak with one of the second generation Hidden Figures, and that was the richest conversation I think I've had in so long. So wow. I would love to have spoken to Katherine Johnson, and I would ask her, how did you maintain your composure and your confidence in that environment where clearly the spotlight was on you and clearly people did not believe in your capabilities and abilities, but you believe in yourself? How did you maintain that despite all those obstacles? How did you keep it going? I mean, every time you see her, you know, in the book, in the movie, it's just like grace and right. style and composure. It's like, how in the world,
right.
all of those things being thrown at you, especially in that environment full of all the, you know, smartest people in the world,
right.
how were you able to do that? I would love to have had that conversation with her.
Well, that's quite a question. Mm-hmm. What's the biggest challenge you face as a Black professional, and how did you overcome it? Professional challenge.
Yeah. I think going into a lot of rooms where people assume that you are not capable, they assume mm-hmm. that you don't know. One of the projects that I led was an SAP conversion. So I was the overall project leader, and I had a bunch of men on my team that worked for me. Every time we would travel and go somewhere, people would ask a question and they would go to one of the men. How is such and such happening? And they were starting to get a kick out of, you should ask our boss and point to me. You know, so just going in knowing that and not having a chip on your shoulder, but it's kind of like, okay, I can show you better than I can tell you. It's like, I don't have to wear a crown or have a staff and shield to say, I'm the boss, I'm the manager. Just give it a little time. I'm going to sit and observe, and I'll just show you, and then you'll see. And you don't have to get all upset about this whole thing.
All crazy. All crazy.
Yes.
All right. All right. Here's one for you. What did you not know before you began your professional career that you wish you had known?
Mm-hmm. I didn't know because I just didn't. That companies are not loyal. So, you know, the company is loyal to its bottom line results, which, hey, that's how they make money. They're not necessarily loyal to the individual. So I didn't know you put all your loyalty in this company and it's not reciprocated. And so you have to start thinking about what is right for you and what is best for you as opposed to putting the company first. And I think from, you know, the generations before us where everybody went to work for the same place for 25, 30 years, retired, got their gold watch, that was kind of the standard. So I kind of admire the new generation of folks coming through. Like they'll leave. They'll have, you know, a different job every couple years, some mm-hmm. every year or so, looking for those things that matter to them. And they have no fear about it, no hesitation. And I think somewhere along the line, I got kind of complacent. And I thought, well, I should just stay. And I probably should have made some moves sooner, but I was being loyal. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. All right, then. The company's loyal to the bottom line. I got it. All right. What's your advice for the audience member who doesn't have position power, but they want to be seen as a leader?
Mm-hmm. I think it's make the most of where you are. So are you being a good steward of the resources that you currently have? How are you treating the position that you do have right now? How are you extending yourself beyond that area of responsibility? Because you got to be able to show I can handle what I have now and I can take on more. Because that's what folks are always looking for is, you know, from the time that we hire people off of a college campus, we're saying, can this person fit in my environment? And so for every level you go up, they're doing that same assessment. Is this person going to be able to handle it at the next level? So if you're showing you got it at this level, plus you're taking on more responsibilities, you're doing those extra things, then that's the best way to kind of make that transition, because you're showing people, I'm already demonstrating this. So this is a no-brainer for you to go ahead and bring me up to the next level.
Very good. Once again, performance, performance, performance.
Yeah, got it. Okay.
You are listening to the Catapult Leaders Podcast special edition of How I Did It.
All right. Okay, now what about this? Let's see. What would be the title of the book about you if you wrote it?
So I love the title of this podcast, and I thought about that too, and it's How I Did It, and my book would be called I Did It My Way.
Okay. All right. Very good. Very good. All right. Okay. Let's think about this. What's your best advice on how to negotiate a promotion or raise that you've earned? Like, you know, you've earned it. Mm-hmm. It has been given to you. What's your best advice for how to do that?
So I think this one is a combination of that, know your audience and getting your results. So you got to have the substance behind it, right? You can't just go in and say, yeah, I think I should be promoted. I've been here 6 months. So you have those results already. Have you documented them? Who are you sharing those results with? Have you tied your results directly to the bottom line? And so I think sometimes people, they're doing work and they're getting results, but the so what is, how is that helping the company to deliver whatever the company needs to deliver? So if you cannot articulate how your results are contributing directly to the company's priorities and bottom line, then that's where the problem lies. But to the extent that you can do that, I did this, this, and this. This is related to this result. This one's related to this result. And this is related to this result. And oh, by the way, these four things, look at this one right here. You asked for 90%, I gave you 95%. That's how you do it. Let the data speak for itself. And then those mentors and sponsors also saying those same things. So this is where this comes into play as well. You're tuning your horn, and sometimes that's uncomfortable for us, but it's not bragging if it's true. If you did what you did, right? So you talk about what you did, but now if you have other people also saying that, so you got your mentor that's in the room with some other people who are making decisions, and they're saying, hey, did you see Cynthia's results? Did you hear about what Cynthia did? Do you have your elevator speech? So say you're jumping on that elevator, you got 30 seconds. What is it? How are you talking about what you did? Because if it takes you forever to get to it, that's not going to help. You know, one of my managers said, if you cannot tell me something in 3 to 5 bullets, you are taking too much time. And I challenge myself with that all the time. You know, you're trying to give all these explanations. They have checked out after the third one. So the other two could be just bonus items. So you got to be able to say what you're going to say, 3 to 5 bullets, and then leave it there, because that's what other folks are going to repeat. So if I'm your manager and I have heard 5 times how you delivered 95% when the goal was 90% and you did X, Y, and Z, who am I to argue with that? Like, how am I going to say something counter to these facts? These aren't feelings. These are facts.
Wow. Wow. Again, masterclass level. Cynthia, what certifications would you suggest as a key to success in the supply chain field?
You know, I don't necessarily think you have to have certifications unless you want to be considered a subject matter expert in a specific area. Then I'd say maybe get some certifications, get a advanced degree or those kinds of things. But if not, if you're trying to be an end-to-end supply chain manager, I think that your experience helps a whole lot more than those certifications. I think that's where you kind of solidify who you are in supply chains, that experience. But like I said, if you want to be an expert SME in one of the areas, then by all means, get the certifications. But otherwise, try to get those experiences and delivering those results where you can really talk about, this is what I've done in the supply chain, as opposed to, you know, just checking off a whole bunch of things, pieces of paper that you have.
Love it. Now, you know, I know that life in a fishbowl, you know, when you're one of the very few, can be very challenging. It can be a lot of weight, a lot of stress. Okay, so And I've seen it affect people in ways that are not good, right? So, and I've seen other people flourish. Okay, mm-hmm. So to that end, what's your advice to our audience on how to handle being the only one or one of the very few in the organization?
I think the first thing is don't be in denial. We are in a fishbowl still. We are. Sometimes, whether you want to be a role model or not, you are. Whether you want to be the representative or not, you are. We still don't have enough critical mass in the industry and in most companies to where you're not going to be that. So don't reject that. Understand that the spotlight is on you every time that you're there. So you have to be mindful. You have to be strategic about the things that you do, and you have to be mindful of what you say and your interactions, because people are watching. And quite frankly, some people are waiting for you to mess up. Other people are there to support you. So you don't need to go into that thinking that it does not exist. And so know that you're on a spotlight. So don't forget the mic is hot all the time. You need to be aware of those things. So I think helpful things are building your own support network in terms of, again, employee resource groups, so that you have people that you can go and kind of talk to about these things. You can strategize about when you're going to be in certain rooms and certain settings so that you can get that inside information on, okay, what should I expect? What is going to look like success here? What do I need to do? How can I be prepared? You know, so that you can maybe have that one extra person in the room that you can look to say, okay, great. I'm not here by myself. I'm not alone. Or have a person that's going to speak to someone who's going to be in the room and say, hey, Cynthia is going to be in that meeting tomorrow doing a presentation. She's very well prepared. I'm sure she's going to do a great job. Those little subtle things go a long way. So again, back to the importance of having a good network, mentors, and sponsors as well. But yeah, don't ever think that you're not. We have not overcome. So please understand and know we're still in the fishbowl.
Yeah. Still in the fishbowl. Okay. All right. What are the best ways to make sure that your professional contributions are recognized within the organization? You've talked it during this conversation, but if you can go granular now, so people are doing things, how do they make that happen so they're recognized?
Yeah. So making sure that you're having regular meetings with your manager, not just your manager, but your one up manager. So if you're meeting with your manager on a monthly basis, on a quarterly basis, meet with your one-up manager. It's not to usurp your manager. It's so that you make sure that you're getting that visibility. Mm-hmm. Everybody's not going to think of that, but if you're the one that's doing it, guess what? That's helpful. You're the only person that's in their face. Again, think of the 15-minute rule, the higher up you go. These folks do not have 2 hours to meet with you. They got 15 minutes. So you need to come in there with a one-pager. If they like PowerPoints, make it pretty and in color. If they don't, come in there with your 3 to 5 bullets. Talk about what you've done. Say that you'd love to get some advice on their career and you appreciate the trajectory that their career has taken and you just want to make sure that you're learning from them. There's an opportunity right now. So you figured out what you want for your career, but you can put it out there and say it. I would like to be a supply chain director one day. So I'm interested in any advice that you can give me on how I could get there. And do you mind if I set up another meeting with you in 3 months so we can just talk about this again and I can share with you the progress that I have made? So now this person is thinking about you differently, right? They're coaching you differently. And if you've gotten in good with the admins, you're already on the calendar. So now they're thinking, hey, I'm going to this conference. Hey, Cynthia, do you want to go to this conference with me? And people are going to wonder, how she get invited to that conference? Don't worry about that. You own your career, right? So now people are putting hey, I want you to come and, you know, that project that you told me about, I want you to come to this meeting and tell everybody about that project.
And well, they've literally adopted you into the family, right?
Correct. And so you may not have asked them specifically to be your sponsor, but now that sponsorship behavior, that's the kind of thing that you want, is your name spoken in rooms where you're not even in attendance, that people are talking about you in the right places, that when certain positions come up, that your name's now getting thrown in the ring as a potential for that opportunity, as opposed to, you know, you always pushing everything and feeling like you're knocking on the door begging. Now you got people already having the conversation about you. So that to me, that's what you really need to do to push yourself further, but you're going to have to be intentional about it. So if your manager is not schedule regular meetings with you, then you make those happen. And if they don't have time to have a meeting, then you shoot them an email and say, here's my update. And then you still go to the one-up person and you get on that schedule. You know, and if they're not receptive and they're like, well, I really don't like to meet with people, but once a year, okay, fine. I'm putting myself down for next year. I'll be back. You know?
Yep.
So, but you have to make that happen. Because a lot of times leaders will come to a room, they'll come to a conference, they'll give a big speech and they'll say, if you need me, I have an open door policy, reach out to me. No one reaches out to me.
No, right.
So this is your opportunity to seize, take advantage of it. Schedule a meeting. Say, hey, I was really inspired by what you said at that conference. And I just thought maybe I could get a few minutes of your time to talk. Why not? I mean, what's the worst that could happen?
I mean, you learn something.
You learn something.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, you already weren't meeting with them. So if they don't want to meet, it's like, okay,
that's right.
Meet with somebody else. I mean, you know, but if you don't put the effort out there to do it, and then you're equipping them, right? So when you give these little one pagers and summarize your results that way, then your boss and your boss's boss doesn't have to try to remember. They can just take that little piece of paper with them when they go on a meeting. They're like, hey, I got everything I need right here.
There it is. Yeah. So, you know, we've got just a few questions left, but there are so many folks who are literally going to take you into their career with them now, right? Mm-hmm. Because you're giving literally a soup to nuts process about mm-hmm. how you have to be on your game. You said earlier, and I don't want to take up your time, but you talked about owning your career. And that's what this whole thing is. You've got to own it, take initiative, be relentless, accept what it is, and keep. Man, he said, I love it, and I want to tell you, I wish that way back that someone like you, this had been available to me to hear this. I was like, oh, okay, cool. Mm-hmm. Let me do that stuff. So I just want to tell you, I'm thanking you. We have a couple of three questions left. I'm thanking you already because it's just been a genius run with you. So thanks a lot. All right, mm-hmm. Okay. So I know for you because we've chatted before this that you've got a lot for this next question. Have you ever had to or chosen to make a professional pivot in your career? And if so, what was the pivot? What were the pivots and how did you do it?
Yeah, I'm a professional pivoter, I think, at this point. That goes back to the I did it my way thing. So the first one was when I declared at a manufacturing plant that I actually wanted to do supply chain, which meant I wanted to go to the warehouse, which also meant that I wasn't going to stay at the plant forever. So I'm a Georgia girl, went to Georgia Tech, started my career in Albany, Georgia, but I'm sitting here saying, I know there's nothing else that I can do if I want this career. So that's the part about owning your career and knowing what that means when you say those things, mm-hmm. what the consequences of that are. That means I can't stay here. I have to move. Mm-hmm. And so really very shortly, it was less than 6 months after I started really saying this is what I want. When I got into the warehouse and I knew for supply chain career, I would keep making lateral moves if I stayed at the plant. Mm-hmm. So I would have to go to headquarters where I could do more supply chain roles and have more supply chain opportunities. So I didn't even, the furthest north I had lived was Tennessee for a summer internship. So okay. Cincinnati was big for me. It was a big deal. That was up north. Even though it's right across this bridge from Kentucky. But for me, that was up north and that was a big deal. So I had to make that choice to move up north. There was a role that was basically exactly what I had described that I wanted to do, but it was in Cincinnati. And I had 24 hours to make a decision on whether or not I wanted to take that role.
24 hours, wow.
24 hours. Yeah, so I got a call. So, you know, that's the other thing I think people need to understand that the rules of the game, there are like, you know, the system where you apply for a job and internally and all of that good stuff and they review the apps. And that does happen and that's fair and correct. But sometimes they already have a pre-defined candidate, somebody that they want. And that's what you want to be, is the somebody that they want. So that's what happened. The hiring manager called me and said, I have this role. Do you want it? I need to know. I said, when do I need to tell you? And I'm thinking I have a week or two. He's like, tomorrow. Okay. And I literally had just bought a house in February, sold it in September, moved to Cincinnati. And, you know, best move I ever made, best decision I ever made. People thought I was crazy. You know, the realtor was saying, nobody's going to buy your house in September. School has already started. Sold the house in 3 days.
Everybody knows everything and then they don't, right?
Yeah, exactly. I was like, I think this is definitely divine intervention because everything kind of worked itself out. And so after I was in Cincinnati, which in my mind, when I left, I was only going to stay for 5 years, do a couple of roles, and then I was going to move on. 14 years later, had great assignments, but it got to the point where I was compromising my health.
You are listening to the Catapult Leaders Podcast special edition of How I Did It.
Because I was working in transportation operations, and we had, I think at the time, we had the second largest supply chain behind the U.S. Postal Service.
Wow.
And so I spent every holiday, every time there was a bad weather situation, every time there was a labor strike at a port, trucking company, rail, or anything, all of those things impacted my results. So I spent all my time watching the weather and chasing trucks around the country. And I kept thinking, this is not the purpose that I have for my life, to chase toilet tissue and, you know, washing powder around the country. Like, this is not really fun. And I don't feel fulfilled. And, you know, at the time, my last grandparent had passed. And so I'm like, I'm so far away. My parents are getting older. I made a new definition of success. I no longer have to be the director or VP of supply chain. What I need to be is close to my family. I want to make a contribution, but this ain't working for me. I'm working 12, 14 hours a day and most weekends. Yeah, this isn't it. This isn't it. So but I got more clear. So it wasn't just, I'm just going to leave, but I had decided if I needed to leave the company, I would. But what I said was, one of the opportunities that opened up for me because I was delivering my square and going over and above my square is I had an opportunity to teach operational excellence to developmental managers. Okay. So I was actually teaching some of my peers, helping to prepare them for the next level. And I wasn't at the next level yet. So that's part of that act like you're already at the level where you're supposed to be. So right. I was working with people in the training. I got a lot of exposure to some HR directors as well as some vice presidents from across the globe. And I was talking one day to one of the HR directors and she said, have you ever thought about HR? And I was like, no, absolutely not. That is where that's where they send the Black people off to, you know, hide. No, I'm not. Oh, no, I'm not. You know, I was just like almost disrespectful to her. It was like no, ma'am. And she said, well, I just want to offer you this. There are 6 competencies for HR and you have all of them. I was like, do I? She's like, yeah, let me show you. And she showed me and I was like, yeah, I have actually done all of those things. She's like, yeah, that's what I thought. She's like, and so you're looking to do something different. I'm just going to offer that to you and I'm going to leave it there. And so I thought about it and I said, okay, well, if I do HR, I only want to do HR at a plant because I feel like the decisions that I make, I can see how they directly impact people. Like, please no, don't put me in benefits and have me sit in the office. I can't handle it. I was like, so, okay, I want to be HR in a plant and I want to be within 4 hours of my parents. And so I just pulled out the map and I started circling locations. I'm willing to go here, 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 and here. And in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, nobody's going to go for this, but I'm just going to ask for what I want. And that's what, you know, one of my other mentors always tells me, the universe cooperates with the made up mind. So had my mind made up, like this is what's happening right now. This is what I want. And that's what I said. And they said, oh, we can probably make that happen. So I was given instructions. I want you to talk to this person. So I go talk to that person. Crazy thing about it, the person that was the director over all of the HR manufacturing folks was used to be an engineering director. We used to sit across from each other in a previous role, and we worked together on several projects. And so I saw his name, but it was a common name. And I was like, it's probably not the same person. So when we talked, he said, I thought that was you. He's like, you're not too crazy. Where you want to work? So I showed him my list. These are the places. He said, oh, okay, most of those places are up under this one person who works for me. So I want you to go talk to him. So, but by the time I had talked to him, he had gotten a call from his boss and from someone else saying, Cynthia's coming to talk to you about this role. You need to find somewhere for her to go. I went and talked to him. While I was researching him, I realized that a previous manager that I had was now the plant manager at the location, okay, one of the locations on my list that was closest to my parents, and the HR manager was retiring. She called, she said, I have money in my budget for relocation. Do you really want to do this? I'm like, absolutely. She's like, how soon can you come? I was like, it's tomorrow soon enough. So when I spoke to the one person I didn't know, he had his plant manager, his boss, all telling him Cynthia is the one for this role. So he would be crazy to come back unless I just completely had a meltdown to say, I don't want Cynthia for the role. Right. So we had a very brief conversation. He was like, okay, sounds good to me. And that's how I made that change. But it all started with me making up my mind and saying, this is what I want. I'm going to declare it. I'm going to say it. And if I can't get it here, I had decided if I can't get it here, then I'll get it somewhere else. Because this is what's most important for me right now in my career.
Owning your career. That's the headline here. That's the headline. Wow. Okay. Yeah. Let's see. What are two books you recommend to our audience they read and why?
First one would be Who Moved My Cheese? I read it and reread it probably every year. And the thing that I like most about that book is this one question that I have to ask myself. And that question is, what would you do if you weren't afraid? Mm-hmm. And so those career pivots, I had to challenge myself. Like, okay, are you not doing this because you're afraid? So if you weren't afraid, what would you do? I would ask for this job. Okay, well, I'm going to ask for it. You know, in life and everything, it's like fear controls us. And I'm not telling people to not be afraid, but to have the courage to face the fear. And what's the worst that could happen, you know? And so that book has been really good. And the other book, I'm looking here for the full title.
Sure. That was Who Moved My Cheese? Okay, Who Moved My Cheese? Got it. Okay.
This was a pretty new one. It's called The 8 Paradoxes of Great Leadership. Okay. And this one it came out this year, I think. Okay. And it talks about in this time how leaders have to kind of be what seems like a paradox. So you have to be confident and humble. And how do you do that? You have to be visible and invisible. So there's times when the leader needs to stand out front. There's times when you need to step back and allow your people to get the shine, if you will. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's just a really good kind of way to describe, especially in this environment, how leadership has changed and what you have to do in order to be successful. So some of the things that may have worked 10 or 20 years ago, they don't work anymore in this environment. We got a new set of people coming in and all of that, because I said so stuff, it doesn't cut it. It didn't work for me, but it definitely doesn't cut it now. So how do you balance that? And then my bonus would be, I love Valerie Burton. She has some really good books, like Successful Women Think Differently. I love that one. And then John Maxwell, I'm a big fan. So anything by him, probably some good reading and helpful.
The one for Valerie Burton was, what was the name of that one again?
Successful Women Think Differently.
Okay. Uh-huh. Okay. Anything by John Maxwell. Okay. So Who Moved My Cheese? The 8 Paradoxes of Great Leaders. Is that correct? Mm-hmm. Successful Women Think Differently. And anything by John Maxwell.
There you go.
Okay. See, I'm listening. I'm paying attention. This is good.
You are.
Very good. Very good. This is the last question now. This is the one where you have the complete runway. Is there any question that you wish I'd asked you that I did not, and how would you have answered?
Maybe what are some other things that have helped me to be successful up until this point? And again, success as I define it. And a couple of things that I just wanted to talk about, and I hit them a little bit, but one is purpose. So I believe everybody has a purpose and they're put here for a purpose. And once we start living in our purpose, walking in our purpose and living on purpose, you start to see a big difference in how you're able to excel. So when you're not trying to be like someone else, because no two career paths are the same, you're not trying to speak, talk, or behave like anyone else. The end game is the same. Get great results. But how you go about getting those great results should be uniquely you. And that's what's going to make you successful. So when we are in purpose, walking in our purpose and living on purpose, those things start to open up. I think that if I didn't say it enough, you got to get results. So you can't just show up and say, because I'm here, I feel like I should get promoted or I should get more money. You got to have, as they say, some receipts to back that up. Right. So make sure that you have your receipts. And then being strategic. So I don't just make moves to think about what it is that I want this year. So when I started my career, I have a plan that says 15 years from now, this is where I want to be. So now I back up and say, in order for me to get there in 15 years, what are the things that I need to do? Like, what are the roles? What are the skills that I need to acquire? Who are the people that I need to know? Who do I need to influence so that when I get to that mark, I'm not sitting around wondering why I didn't get there? And give myself the freedom that I could change all of that. So I could get married and say, you know what? I don't really want to do that anymore, because if I make that choice, it means I have to take an international assignment. I have to do X, Y, and Z. Maybe that's not important for me anymore. You have children, or you have aging parents that you have to take care of. And so the strategy is important, but the other thing is it's not so rigid that you can't change it.
Okay.
So that's my last little 2 cents.
Well, I tell you what, this has been remarkable. The conversation has been remarkable because you've answered the many questions that I've asked you. You've elaborated on them. You've cut to the point. I mean, you've cut to the point right to the nub, while still having me understand it. Let me follow up with one. I want to make sure I get this. You mentioned PIE earlier. So mm-hmm. P is for performance.
Mm-hmm.
I is for image. Mm-hmm. E is for?
Exposure.
Okay, performance, image, and exposure. Again, that's all around the ownership thing. My goodness. Mm-hmm. Well, mm-hmm. I want everybody listening to know that I truly appreciate Cynthia Colbert for giving us this time, for sharing this fantastic, fantastic perspective on all these questions. Let me tell you, if you think these questions are easy to answer, connect with me and we'll put you on the show and you get a chance to answer the question now. Every time she answered, she knows this. She's been around, you know, every answer she gave is going to be evaluated fully. People think, wait a minute, does that make any sense? Can I do that? Have I seen that work? And I can tell you, as a person who's been around a little bit, every single response she gave is right on point. I would give it to that advice. In fact, I'm going to do this. I would give it to a loved one and say, listen to this, execute your career based on this. Just listen to this and execute your career. If you have any questions, re-listen to it. And I want to thank you so much, Cynthia, okay?
Thank you. Thank you so much. I appreciate the opportunity. And you know, this is why I left my beloved supply chain. This is pretty much what I do every day now, is I train leaders and I give people career coaching, because I feel like it's so important to kind of share those nuggets with others. So I thank you for this opportunity, for exposure for me and what I do as well.
Well, I'm going to make sure we give people a way to contact you. And I want to tell everyone, reach out to Cynthia, connect with her. If you're fortunate enough to have her working with you, you won. You can tell that you have won. So, Cynthia, thank you so much. I might reach out to you.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you. I really appreciate it. It's been great.
For everybody out there, remember this. I want 2 things. One is, wherever you are in your career, the best is yet to come. And I want to make sure that, like Cynthia said, she didn't use these words, enjoy life. It's your career. It's your future. Own it and shape it the way you wish. Thanks, Cynthia.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed this Catapult Leaders podcast edition of How I Did It. Cynthia Colbreth shared wisdom that will help you reach higher and achieve your professional goals. In truth, there was a time when we did not have access to this type of proven advice. From owning your career to the biggest professional mistake she made, to her powerful advice for uplifting your career, to her amazing five keys for Black women to achieve professional success, to how you can handle the pressure that comes from being in a fishbowl at work, to her 15-minute rule, to the connection between the universe and a made-up mind, and beyond, this podcast episode of How I Did It from Catapult Leaders featuring Cynthia Colbreth will change your life. You can reach Cynthia at awonderfulchange.com. Know this, what you want from life will not come from chance. What you want will come from changes that you make in yourself. This has been Daryl Mobley. Reach out to us at catapultleaders.com or on LinkedIn if you wish to talk about career possibilities. Our company's mission is to assist you to get that great next job. From all of us at Catapult Leaders, the best is yet to come. Enjoy life. Also, you can subscribe to the Catapult Leaders podcast at podcast.catapultleaders.com or wherever you get your podcast. One more thing. Together, we win.